right, we're back. Final thoughts. You know, lost so many baseball luminaries so far over the last couple of months. Buddy Harrelson, Jerry Grody, Pat Zachary, which we talked about a little bit. I really should probably get into at some point at Beyond the Mic how good Jerry Grody was, because we really didn't do justice to his memory. And that's one of the things that we pride ourselves on this show doing, is looking back at Mets history and giving it the respect and the honor that it deserves. But this week we lost Whitey Herzog. I mean, Whitey was like one of the first villains that I remember. I started watching baseball, as I mentioned earlier, in 1987. It was such paranoia, and a lot of people, myself included, back when I was a kid, I remember my dad talking about how Whitey originally was part of the Mets. He was in the Mets front office, player development. You know, he was a third base coach under Wes Westrum. And Whitey, if he didn't have a battle with M. Donald Grant, and M. Donald Grant, I mean, if you think about the yoke that's around the organization that we talk about all the time, that maybe started when Terry Pendleton hit that ball over the fence, or maybe the deal with the devil that somebody made when there was two outs and nobody on in game six in 1986, whatever it is. But if you want to talk about a yoke that's around the team, M. Donald Grant has a lot to do with it, between how he handled the Seaver situation and, you know, the battles he had with Whitey Herzog. Was quite simply, it seemed like he found out Whitey Herzog didn't think very much about his baseball acumen, which was correct. M. Donald Grant didn't know anything about baseball. He was a businessman. Whitey would have been somebody to take over for Gil Hodges. I think the plan it apparently was for Whitey to take over for Gil, and maybe Gil to go into the front office at some point if Gil had not passed away. And, you know, look, at Whitey goes over and turns the Kansas City franchise around, and he takes a St. Louis team that was in the doldrums and turns them into not a dynasty, but they won a World Series, and they were a couple of pennants in the 80s, and they tormented the Mets. I mean, I remember people telling me in 86 when Whitey said, hey, it's June, the Mets are going to win the division, we're waving the white flag. People are like, well, what is he up to? I mean, he was Phil Jackson with the mental games before Phil Jackson. Think about it. You know how Phil used to be in the 90s with the Knicks? I mean, he was like a real villain. I mean, really, when you look at the coaches and villains, I mean, maybe Belichick falls into that a little bit if you're a Jets fan as a villain. You know, the NBA would be Phil Jackson when he was a Bulls coach back in the 90s. I mean, that was who Whitey Herzog was. And I think it would be, you know, it's always interesting to say what if. What if this happened? What if Pendleton doesn't hit the home run? What if Socha doesn't hit the home run? What if Generation K didn't turn out to be a bust? We could go on and on and on. What if Piazza's ball didn't magically fall into Bernie Williams' glove and he tied the game against Mariano Rivera? You know, there's so much you could have talked about in Mets history. What if? I mean, it's a team that the yoke, part of the yoke is the what if and the look back that we have. But Whitey's a what if that hurts, because he clearly was a game changer. He was an organization builder. He was a guy that would go into situations, and I know that he went to Texas and it wasn't successful with the Rangers, but you know, he really wasn't given a chance there, and it looks like there was a lot of meddlesome situations from the owner. But when Whitey was given an organization, and it was his team, I mean, he was a GM with the Cardinals for a lot, you know, good things happened. Good things happened. So, you know, I think it's important to remember him, and, you know, those were some fun rivalries with the Cardinals. They probably weren't fun when they were going on. What an annoying team to play with the speed, and there was always that, you know, Whitey sitting in the dugout with that persona, the white rat persona, where you just wanted to hit him, you hated him. But listen, Whitey, in a lot of ways, outmanaged Davey Johnson from time to time. You know, some of it was bad luck with the Mets with injuries and whatnot, but one of the reasons why the Mets didn't make the postseason more in the 80s, 85, 87, was because he was, you know, Whitey Herzog's teams just flat out beat the Mets. They were better managed. So wanted to put that out there, and really, you know, I wrote it over, and, you know, what I'm trying to do over at Instagram is once in a while throw these little things out there that, you know, thoughts, you know, because they're not really like the newsletter, which is in depth. They're more like, hey, here's a photo and here's a thought. Like, I'm not good at Instagram, but I wanted to get it more engaged, so I put that up there, and I'll continue to put up some thoughts here and there about the Mets. And, you know, just if you're on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and I'll pop up there. I don't understand how the algorithm works. So if everybody sees me that follows me, it's a very small following on Instagram. It's not like the X following or the newsletter, which has a really solid following, and I've built it over many, many years. But it's part of this interaction of us following the Mets and enjoying the Mets and enjoying the Mets content. The other thought I had as I wrap up here, and I thought about it on Monday, you know, while I'm noodling on the whole Citi Field versus Shea Stadium situation, I was thinking about Jackie Robinson. It was Jackie Robinson Day on Monday. And over the years, unfortunately, as we move further and further away from when they retired Jackie's number 42 throughout the whole league in 1997, and I remember that like it was yesterday, Mets and Dodgers, it's not been the same type of day. I mean, clearly with 18,000 or so at in attendance, I didn't even realize it was Jackie Robinson Day until they showed up to the ballpark. So shame on me, right? But I did, and this is really what I think the lack of us, and it's very important for us to go back from time to time and just look at some of the great players and look at the numbers they produced and maybe look at the, whatever clips you can find of them. Now, no doubt Jackie Robinson's legacy is having the opportunity because of Branch Rickey and having the thick skin and fortitude to break the color barrier. A most ridiculous situation that is a complete nonsense scenario. There was no reason why that ever should have existed. I mean, that's not saying anything that we don't know. In a lot of ways, I don't take baseball stats seriously prior to Jackie Robinson and the color barrier being broken because you're not seeing the best of the best. I mean, think about today. Think about the game we watched today, Mets and Dodgers, Ohtani. We have, you know, Japanese players. We have South, you know, Dominican players. You know, we have obviously American players. We have players from all over the globe playing in this game. And I think this game, not so much, not quite like the NBA, which has more of a global sport persona because of the great work that the Dream Team did back in the early 90s. And, you know, baseball doesn't have that Dream Team or that kind of team that could capture the imagination and maybe bring kids all around the world and have them fall in love with the sport. But, you know, baseball is also much more global than it's ever been. I mean, I know that there's some underrepresentation from African Americans, and, you know, maybe some of that has to do with the money or the lack thereof that that sport provides early in the career versus the NBA and the NFL. It's perfect economic sense. You get into the NBA and within a couple of years out of college, and when I say college, maybe 1 year of college, and maybe high school coming out, you could be making millions of dollars. I mean, you can't ever criticize anybody for making that decision. But that's not what I'm thinking about with Jackie Robinson. So we talk about Jackie Robinson. We talk about the color barrier. We talk about, you know, all he did to be the face of that situation. But we don't really talk about how good of a player he was. Maybe it's taken for granted. Anybody could have come in. If Branch Rickey picked a player, now he had to pick the right player, he had to pick the player with the right temperament, and he probably wanted to pick a player that had a chance to be a very good player. But it was no guarantee that the first African American to play in the major leagues would have been an elite Hall of Famer. And he was elite. He won the Rookie of the Year. He won the MVP. He had a career OPS plus of 133. He had a career on-base percentage of .410. There is only three players from the point in time when he came up and came up with the Dodgers in 1946 until 1957. He was fourth in baseball in WAR during that time. That's more than Duke Snider. That's more than Mickey Mantle. That's more than Yogi Berra. That's more than Willie Mays. That's more than Roy Campanella. An elite offensive player. Could play multiple positions. Second base. Played a little bit of first base. Later in his career, he played some outfield. And, you know, from reports, he was pretty good everywhere they put him. And, you know, maybe the Dodgers only won one championship later in his career in 1955 when he was 36 years old. And look, he was starting to decline. And that year he won the World Series. He was a below league average hitter. But he also, that year they won the World Series in Brooklyn, he walked 61 times and struck out 18 in 390 plate appearances. That's insane. His last year When he played 117 games before he retired, he was traded to the Giants and he retired. He walked 60 times and struck out 32, still hit .275, had an OPS plus of 107, had an OPS of 793. I mean, you take these numbers right now. If Harrison Bader gave you these numbers or Jeff McNeil gave you these numbers, you'd be like, whoa, I'll take these numbers. And that's a Jackie Robinson on the way out the door. So I thought it was important for me just to share on the way out here a smorgasbord of thoughts, a lot of which came up on things not related to the 2024 Mets. And just, you know, end the show on a high note with some of that stuff. And of course, I always like to hear from you. Do you have memories of Whitey Herzog? What are your thoughts about Jackie Robinson? And maybe are we appropriately remembering the player? We know about the social aspect of who he was and how important what he did was. Not taken away of that. I'm not saying we shouldn't talk about that. But do we talk about him as the player enough? How great of a player he was? Because I don't think we do. You know, and really, I shouldn't even do 1946 because he started in 1947. 46 was the year before he got called up. And if you look at that, only Stan Musial and Ted Williams had better war than him. I mean, that's incredible. That's insane, you know, when you think about it. So anyway, wanted to thank everybody for tuning in to the latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X, Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. Don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@talkingmetsnoG. And on Instagram, Talking Mets No G. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Don't forget to check me out at 9 o'clock. Anthony Rivera's Subway to Shea Mets Giants live YouTube preview show. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.